It is easy to say you don't believe. It's easy to pass on talks of spirituality and religion. Belief is faith-based and involves thinking that breaches the unknown. Some people like to live in their own world, made of completely scientific views and fact-based answers. For the philosophical thinkers, though, some questions are not so easily solved. For the mind of paranormal enthusiasts, there are times where our curiosity can get the best of us, and it can leave us with reoccurring regret and turmoil for years to come, and sometimes, attachments to the dark. For those that have faced the devil, he is very real, and his demons are at work, within the world, and people, and maybe in work in you right now. One such case is Paranormal Task Force member Nicholas Campagna, who through his high school years was a member of the occult. For him, those years are a blur, and the only real thing he remembers is what is still attached to him. This episode is an intimate and personal reveal of someone who has decided to fight back, to own his demons, and talk about what he has blocked for so many years. This episode will be broken into two parts. It's not the typical Frankie and Jeremy banter, the sound bites and laughter. No, it's far more serious than that. Because in this episode, the devil is truly in the details. Welcome to Graveyard Shift. Welcome to Graveyard Shift, the podcast from Shift Films. I'm Frankie Campoletta.
And I am Jeremy King.
Today we invited another Paranormal Task Force member with us, Nick Campagna. He has been with the team a little under a year and with his wife, Nikki. So it's Nikki and Nick on the Paranormal Task Force. Nick has had some interesting experiences growing up here locally, and one of those experiences is the occult. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the problems and the demons that he faces today from the residual effects of being in the occult 3 years of his life. So with that, I'm going to introduce our friend, our companion and team member, Nick Campagna.
Hello, how are we all doing?
Good, brother.
Good.
Excellent.
So we'll start with the real basics. You're local here, right?
Yeah.
And
I'm local here in San Luis. Grew up in St. Charles and basically lived a whole life in there.
Okay.
Jim, San Luis itself. So this is a chapter of my life that it's kind of hard to discuss, but at some time or another it has to be let out how bad this can be if you go to a certain level of the occult.
Right. And I think that's what's important about the show, right? I think that, you know, this is not, you know, glorifying it in any regard.
No, not at all. We have different aspects of it. I mean, it goes deeper than what I was involved in.
This is a local podcast. This is a local St. Louis thing. I'm not from here, but I do respect a lot of the traditions. So I'm going to have to ask the famed question, where did you go to high school?
Went to Duchesne High School in St. Charles.
Tell me a little bit about Duchesne. What kind of an atmosphere is Duchesne?
It was just like a lot of Catholic high schools. They, I don't know if they necessarily push, but yeah, they do push religion. And that was something that I didn't agree with. There were some things in the Catholic faith that I didn't agree with. And there was other people that didn't agree with me also. You would go to religion class every year. You would have some type of religion class, whether it was theology or just basic religion every year of high school.
Elementary, your middle school, was that also all private and Catholic?
Yes, it was.
So you were Catholic from...
From the get-go.
Okay. You know, I grew up Catholic. I'm still very Catholic. I think everybody has a different experience growing up Catholic and what you get from it, what you gain from it. I loved my priest. I never had the, you know, the spotlight stuff. And I do recognize that. And it makes me very angry to be Catholic. It makes me very angry that we let things fall through the cracks, that we try to escape it. And I think the new Pope now is trying to rectify those situations.
He is. I mean, what really bothers me is just the cover-ups.
Yeah.
You know, trying to cover everything up. It's like, and that's what's really giving the Catholics a bad name.
It's the truth. And
yeah, you know, for priests and whatnot. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about the Catholic religion by any means, but that's what's really giving them a bad name.
There has been a mass exodus, you know, as of late. I mean, they're trying to make new changes within the church. The thing for me is that I always fall back to is I grew up Roman Catholic, which is very different from, you know, Catholic here, right? Roman Catholic was, we went to an altar, we were on our knees the entire time. The priest spoke to an altar of gold in Latin. You could not touch the host with your hand, and they wore Roman cloaks. So it was
you didn't really get much from it because nobody spoke Latin. And so we eventually, you know, evolved into more of a Catholic environment where things started to make sense. Your relationship with your parents at this point as a child in high school is good. You have the normal rebel type of attitude. I mean, you're still playing sports. You still...
Yeah, I mean, I still play sports. I play soccer and baseball. You know, I went to the dances. I did everything as a normal high schooler. I had my rebellious stages in it, but I, at that time, hid everything that what I was actually wanting to be at the time and doing.
So you portrayed almost two different lives.
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings?
I have a younger brother.
And how young is he?
He's 3 years younger than I am.
Okay, so he's basically me and Jeremy's age. Did he know about it?
No.
So this show is kind of, you know, kind of your out, if it ever...
Basically, yeah. I mean, nobody in my family really knows about that, any of this.
And you're okay with...
It's kind of hard, because I have to know what my parents do hear this. My mom would probably, if she ever heard this, and she would probably go, this guy shaved your head, where'd we go wrong? And they didn't go wrong.
Yeah.
It was all me. I mean, my parents didn't do anything. My parents raised me the best way they did.
Yeah.
I'm liked. I mean, I'm outgoing. I have no problems with anybody. So my parents weren't well off. They did what they needed to do to make sure I had a good education. But I graduated.
What is the first real stage? What is the step that you think is the pivot point? What happened? What was that? What brought you really into it, though?
What brought me really into it was curiosity. This is a little bit different than paranormal as we go into the occult. So what do a lot of people do? I had a Ouija board, and that's what started everything off. I mean, it was in 89, summer of 89, going into the 90s, it would be freshman, sophomore year. We'd go into, as myself, a buddy of mine, our two girlfriends, and what at the time what I thought was a friend.
But you'd never met her before, had you?
No, I'd never met the third girl. Never have.
Okay.
So, I mean, I didn't know who she was. We just figured it was a friend of ours, a friend of our girlfriend, so I really didn't hang around too much of the people from my high school. Unless I grew up with them. No, yeah, but other than that, not really. We go back to his house, we play with the Ouija board, and that's what started getting things moving in the direction that I went into.
Was this the first time you had played with the Ouija board?
Yes.
So the first time you'd seen it?
Yep.
You knew how to play it, though, or did he teach you?
No, I know how to play it, per se. I mean, it wasn't that hard. I've heard about them, but I've never played with one. I actually saw one, just heard about them and what they would do. And it piqued my interest.
So when you're sitting there, you have your girlfriend, mm-hmm. your friend's girlfriend, and a third party.
Correct.
First time you're meeting her, she gets into the car, you drive to your friend's house, he takes the board out. And is it a vintage board? Is it just a game board?
Just a game board.
He takes the board out. It's just a standard Parker Brothers Ouija board.
Yes.
Is there any enchantments? Is there anything that's happening? Any kind of ritualistic things on opening of the board?
On opening of the board, what we did was have candles around. When we were in darkness, it's up in the candlelight. It was the fall, like I said, fall 89 and all that. So, you know, you're looking right around Halloween, which is my favorite time of the year. Then we went in, had candlelight around, and had some incense. And then actually on the incense, I do remember on that one, it was dragon's blood.
Okay.
So we had that going in the background, and no sounds, no nothing. It was a chilly night. I mean, I had on sweatshirts and jeans, you know, so did everybody else. Our girlfriends, of course, had layers and layers of clothes. But I mean, it was just a chilly night. Something you would do with, you know, the game. You just let around before first, but then things started getting heavy, if you will.
And what do you mean by heavy? Tell me what happens when you're... So you guys are playing the board. You're going around. You're asking questions. You're opening yourself up to visitation at that point. You are telling the board that you want to communicate.
Yes.
And it's being taken seriously, right? You guys lit candles.
Yeah, I mean, it's being taken very seriously. I mean, we wanted to know if it really worked.
Was anybody playing the board alone?
No.
Okay.
There was only two, my friend and I. Our girlfriend didn't have any involvement with it.
But they were around the board?
They were around the board.
And this third party?
Correct.
What was she doing with you guys?
She was And she was basically in the middle of our two friends.
Okay.
Our girlfriends. So, I mean, if you're looking at a table, it would have been myself at one side, my friend at the head, and across from me was my girlfriend, and across from my friend was his girlfriend, across the table, and then the third party was in the middle of our two girlfriends.
Okay.
Like I said, it never mattered, but it was friend at the time.
So we're sitting around the table, and you said things started getting heavy. Were the questions getting more deep?
A little bit. I didn't ask any questions. I let my friend do it because it was my first time. I didn't want to ask anything wrong, per se.
Mm-hmm.
So you start out with generic questions. You know, is anybody here? Is there a spirit with us? And it's very hard to manipulate a board.
Yeah.
Like, especially when you're a teenager, you don't have access to technology or anything like that. So, I mean, it's hard to manipulate that board. And when you start asking questions or anything, I'm just like, okay, it's moving. But that just felt a very heavy weight on me. And after that, and that was going in about 10 to 15 minutes of it. After about 30 minutes total, roughly, I zoned out. I don't remember about a 15, 20 minute span of what happened with me. All I go off of was what I was told.
So your friend
mm-hmm.
and your girlfriend.
Correct.
Told you what happened.
Correct. They told me what was happening because what had happened to me because I was outside.
How did you get outside?
Evidently, within that 15-20 minute span of me playing the Ouija board with my friend, I evidently blacked out, started sweating profusely, and started talking in another tongue. Nobody knew what I was saying. And it wasn't like a chant or anything, it was just words being spit out. So they got worried about me because my shirt was really drenched. So they started taking off my sweatshirt, shirt, socks, shoes, and they got me outside because it was cool. They go find a thermometer, and see my temperature's right at about 102. Which, you know, if you're at 102, your body's going to overheat.
So you're standing outside,
mm-hmm.
you don't have a shirt on, it's got to be at least 50 degrees outside.
I had no recollection of what happened, except for what they told me.
And this is kind of the beginning
yes.
of your path to the Aquadome.
Yes. Yeah, that was the start because I knew I opened up something that intrigued me, but at the same time scared me.
Do you remember seeing anything, hearing anything?
I heard at the time. Wilder trance, if you want to call it that. Better voice. It was a female voice. Saying, not daddy, not this one, not now. And at that time, I remember seeing a face, about 3/4 of a face, and then also just disappearing, and that's when I woke up.
Can you explain the face? You said 3/4, so you can see an eye, a nose, a mouth, but you.
For the most part, yeah, I couldn't see the right side of the eye, the right eye socket or anything, and it wasn't eyeballs and all that. It was just the sockets were black, like where the eyes and nose were. And the face was just a deep red with a orangish black glow behind it. Didn't know what it was, really didn't think anything about it. But I hadn't really thought about it. I'm like, this is what I saw. When that all happened, I came to and everybody, like I said, everybody told me what was going on, what happened to me. And I had asked. You know, I didn't see the third party that was with my girlfriends. At the time, really didn't think about it. And after that, that's what sort of got me a little bit more intrigued with the occult.
Okay, we'll take our break now and we'll recap. We just learned that Nick started with a Ouija board. This is a lot of my history. Anytime a board is involved, it usually can lead to a dark path. This is the path that Nick decides to take. Nick also, during this trance, during this embodiment with the Ouija board, blacks out for 20 to 30 minutes, and what he remembers is pretty startling. This is what he had to say about what he saw and what he heard.
Within that trance, after reportedly waking up and everything, first thing come out of it, I saw people in the face, of a face, and eye sockets, nose, and the eyes all black. Their face, one just glow in the background. Heard a voice saying, "Daddy,
Well, we appreciate you coming on and talking this out, because I think it is important for our listeners and in the future here, when we, you know, when we start developing a following, that they have something to relate and go back to. The voice, was the woman's voice, was it familiar to you? Did you had heard that voice before? Or was it just something that, just a female voice?
It was just a female voice. I mean, I never heard it before. And my girlfriend at the time, I knew what her voice sounded like. This one here was just eerily soft, and it was a little whisper. And I can remember now thinking about it, and just knowing it was just a real soft whisper. And after that, I had no idea.
So, day two, the night, the day after. Are the residual effects of this still affecting you, or are you blocking it out?
Actually, I blocked it out. I didn't think anything about it. We weren't drinking or high or anything like that, so the next day it was just whatever. Didn't think anything about it.
In the off chance this becomes a national broadcast podcast for paranormal, the Aqua Dome, you also called it something else.
Yeah, it was either Aqua Dome or Aqua Dome.
In the history of this, it's built at the turn of the century. It was a water purification plant for TNT, for the wars, I guess, right, Jeremy?
Yeah. They made TNT in Weldon Springs during World War II, and Bush Wildlife, which is a, like a nature reserve, has a bunch of bunkers. Really what they were was to store the TNT that they had made.
And so this gets closed down in the 60s. And then it becomes a great haunt for young kids who want to get in trouble.
Basically, our group for troubled teens, troubled people themselves. I mean, buildings, I mean, there's concrete buildings out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, as time went on, we all through the 70s, and now it became a place for occult and mental segments as well. You know, this is where a lot of rituals were held. That's one different sense. If you talked to anybody about it, and they knew what you were talking about, you would just say the dome.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were involved with anything like that, they would know exactly what you're talking about.
You called it by something else, though, didn't you? You guys.
I've also had it called the church.
Okay.
You know, that's where, like I said, rituals, good or bad, happen. And it's just, granted, now it's all tore down. You know, and the wildlife has taken it over. But the residual, you'll never be able to get rid of.
Can't tear that down.
No, you can't tear down the spirituality and the spirits that are down there. Whether it's a animal, human, whatever. And I guess that's why they have it basically closed down and been saying no. They tried to brush it under the rug for the most part, and they brought it out and saying, no, this is what the cult statements go. But now it's just, they rerouted the road in front. So you can't distinguish where anything's at unless you've been there. They actually took out and dug up the whole road and then rerouted it, so there's no residual of any roads, and you cannot see how people got into certain areas.
This was also, there were layers. You guys called them layers. Layers of hell.
Those there, yes. There was,
So how many levels down is this? And this wasn't a part of the original architecture.
No, from my understanding, it was not. Whether or not, you know, if we buy, we were able to get hold of any prints. But from my understanding, this is not original architecture. It is the, what's called seven layers of hell. And each layer was, had a purpose. Whether it was ritualistic, sacrificial, or just to have, you know, orgies. Unfortunately, there was sexual abuse involved in something that I was really a part of was part two rituals. Level.
But there's still two levels below that.
Below that, there is.
What happens there?
I
In the next episode, Nick's life takes a devastatingly wrong turn as his demons resurface in his final high school years. What he witnesses will live with him forever.
So give me a visualization. You said go down. How many flights would you say? How many feet of earth are you down at this point?
So I'll be down by the fifth level, between 50 and 60 foot down.
So the air is...
The air is thin, but it's still like enough to hold. You have enough oxygen for candle lighting. And that's what we went by, candle lights. I mean, first time I went down, I used a flashlight. The body's like a flashlight. There was a priest there doing it. Thank you.